You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Sophie Grant. Sophie, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sophie, we're talking on January 14th in 2021, and you're in Santa Cruz. How is it there? We're you know, in kind of unusual times. How's the, I don't know, just atmosphere, pandemic situation there?
Yeah, well, in my immediate world, I feel incredibly lucky and have a lot of gratitude for sort of what my daily life is looking like. I'm in Santa Cruz, California, which is this sort of beautiful pocket of, you know, coastal utopia. But it has a kind of a seedy past and interesting history. Anyway, this is where I grew up. And I actually drove across the country with my partner and my one-year-old baby in fall. So I've been out here in California for about, what is it, I guess almost 3.5 months or so now.
So you made a cross-country trip with your one-year-old like child and your partner just last fall.
Exactly. So a little before October, yeah, we actually landed right on my baby. My baby's name is River. Right on his first birthday, we landed in Santa Cruz, my hometown. And, you know, when
you didn't fly. You drove, right?
Well, we drove. And when we had sort of schemed this trip, this mode of transportation, earlier in kind of this spring pandemic time, which was a different sort of psychological time, I think, than the fall. It seemed pretty wild and a little bit impossible to me, but my partner is a musician and he's done lots of touring and he kind of has this love affair with cross-country driving and the way that you can connect to different sites and what you can see and how you can kind of be informed by maybe what you don't know so much, so intimately. I had never done a cross-country. I've never been really in the middle of America, especially during an election time. It sounded wild to see. So we decided that we would do this trip, and we camped for most of it. I think we stayed in maybe two hotels, but for this two-week stretch, we camped out in different, you know, sites across the country, and it was pretty incredible. Probably the best, most motivating, mobilizing, humbling experience I've had this year, really, in a lot of ways.
Wow, I love that. I feel like we could spend this whole interview talking about that. I want to talk about other things. I mean, about that, I'd also like to know about the seedy past of Santa Cruz, and I also want to know about your art. But yeah, the trip sounds really wonderful and amazing. Is there something from that trip that sticks out that you feel taught you something or you want to share with
us
in terms of just an anecdote? Because I would love to travel across country right now, too.
Yeah, well, what's so interesting about the journey also psychologically is knowing that we have to do a return and that it will be a different experience at a different time. So that's a whole thing I'm thinking about down the road. But in terms of the journey itself, I think there were a lot of things that kind of became ritualized, and we found ourselves gravitating to bodies of water a lot. I felt really lucky to be able to immerse ourselves in bodies of water, and temperature and kind of being outside in the elements brought on a new kind of
relationship. Bodies of water where? Are you talking about like hot springs or what?
Rivers and lakes. Yeah, we were in the Black Hills. We submerged ourselves in different bodies of water. I mean, part of this is like you have to bathe, but also just this connection to being outside and, I don't know, sort of stripping away some of the customs of being indoors. I really appreciated that, especially during this time when so much, you know, unfortunately isn't safe to do indoors. So I guess there was a degree of getting accustomed to the earth and the environment and terrain, and it really actually did inform my work, and there was a relationship that developed to the kind of work that I was making because I've been doing rubbings, and I've been taking graphite sticks and canvas directly to different forms and pre-existing objects already that I find. And so actually doing these rubbings throughout my drive became a sort of notational or kind of diaristic way of really relating to these psychological and physical spaces that I've occupied this year. So a lot of these temporary sites that I would, you know, be in on this journey, you know, they're already embedded with different histories echoed on their surfaces, whether it's, you know, a gravestone in the Black Hills or, you know, a signpost in Wisconsin at the Dells for a deer park that I was, you know, encouraged to go check out. So I found that there was a kind of relationship I could have to objects and kind of what defines the periphery of an object through this act of rubbing, of which, you know, I have all these rubbings now that I've made, which are
Oh, that's cool.
Part of
so we
the
should
journey.
Talk about that. And I'm glad that segued into your art. And so tell me what's happening now. So now you have 1 year old child, you're in Santa Cruz and you have these rubbings. What else are you making or what's next?
So, you know, the rubbings actually started prior to the trip. I've been invested in drawing and frottage and rubbing is a relationship to me with drawing for a while. But certainly once the pandemic started and quarantine was a part of my life, I found myself really interested in making work that could be incredibly immediate and incredibly invested in touch, you know, the haptic. So I wanted to be confronting a type of making that didn't have the kind of slowness and kind of internal quietness of my body that maybe I've been more interested in the past. So I would actually go out specifically to this one graveyard where I was in Rochester, New York. This is in late spring of last year, 2020. And I would find all sorts of different elements and forms there in this specific graveyard that I could go on and on about this graveyard because of its history and its richness and relationship to light and vision. But what I think happened for me at that site was it became a really meditative way to have a studio practice outside of my normal, you know, studio. The idea of my studio really expanded. And, you know, there was so much going on in the world at that moment. I mean, there still is, but I was thinking so much about, you know, the loss of life and the protests were going on around George Floyd's killing. And, you know, here I was, this new mother, really isolated from my community in New York. And I would spend time at this graveyard where, you know, the funerary aspect is all too present. And I was thinking so much about unnecessary loss and, you know, specifically thinking about, you know, how George Floyd called out his mother. There was a lot of pain and sadness that I was working through and my relationship to all of that. So I found myself kind of returning to this site to think about my body, to think about forms, what I could do in that moment. And these rubbings really were born out of the cemetery experience, and then they would sort of rework them to certain degrees. But I felt like there was this sort of collection or these arrangements, my relationship to being able to find something in this space. It felt really rich, like a well of possibility. I mean, I even started out making these alphabets where I would find different letters, you know, the sort of typography of the graves, different letters to create these kind of wonky, haphazard alphabets for various friends who had babies for their, like, nursery rooms. You know, I'm going to make your baby an alphabet. And there was something about this sort of, like, minor thing I was making. It wasn't my art that was.
What do you mean, make them an alphabet? How would you make them an alphabet exactly?
So I would, you know, I might find an A from one grave site that was like a certain kind of serif
or something, and then I
would find like a B on a different size and form. But I suppose what I'm getting at is there was this kind of permissiveness of making.
I mean,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but
I love that. I like that you explain that because that's an interesting.
Uh-huh.
That was kind of a gift you were giving people.
Yeah, it was.
Coming out of your practice, which is nice. That's not about like art with a capital A, putting it in a gallery. This is about part of your process, but also sharing it with other mothers or people who are in similar to your position, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I love that. So go on. Yeah, you interrupted me.
Oh yeah, no thanks. I mean, Well, I certainly feel, I felt like there was a lot of giving and kind of, whether it was objects or support, there was a lot of exchange that I felt really lucky and buoyed to have during that time. So, yeah, but, you know, there was a kind of tenderness or a kind of freedom of expression that I experienced through that small act. And I think it really led me towards the expansiveness of what these rubbings and what this kind of finding and intimacy with objects could provide me, as well as just deepening that relationship with the kind of earthen or the landscape and the looking at the ground and the real like relationship of rubbing and what it is to actually have contact and connection with a site. So anyway, long story, I really fell in love with this process and have continued to do these rubbings throughout 2020. And now I'm doing them here in Santa Cruz and I'm doing them not so much focused on cemeteries, but really around different forms and artifacts in my immediate surroundings, which is I'm staying on a property that I grew up. My parents live here. And so I have a lot of relationship to these, like the, you know, the fences or the siding of the house, or, you know, I'm actually working in my dad, who's a photographer, he's an artist. I'm in his studio, and the different lighting, the lights of these, basically like the aperture, you know, the, oh, I'm trying to think about what the actual word is, but like the, not aperture, the kind of artifacts of photography, like these huge lights, these hot lights, when I'm working in the studio at night, these shadows get cast on them, and then kind of translating these forms onto my actual drawings. So there's this weird relationship of not so much maybe the physical being rubbed as much, but also the way light and shadow are now emerging and kind of the translation of that. So, you know, I'm definitely still really interested in what happens when you're dislocated from your normal way of making and your normal studio. And I'm hoping and enjoying the kind of free falling that I'm experiencing of what happens when I'm not in that known space.
And what is coming out of that? So what is hanging, yeah, or how do these develop? There's, this is kind of a new way of creating marks, right? Of working. What do they then become? Are they hung or framed, or what do you do with the work, or what does it turn into?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that actually the final form isn't so dissimilar from kind of the way that I work normally, which is, I would say, somewhere in the realm of, you know, painting, drawing, object making. I'm really interested in work that sort of doesn't completely get defined. I think a lot about edges. I think a lot about materiality specifically. So I was doing a lot of work on vinyl, actually, with hand-built ceramics prior to the pandemic, and I was making these long strips, these little landscape or like timeline-like scrolls that had hand-built ceramics bookended on them, like sort of parentheses. And I was thinking a lot about how, you know, a drawing can kind of speed across a space and your body has to traverse it. Now these drawings that I'm making, I think of them as drawings, even though they really operate on the wall like paintings, and they do actually have a lot of pigment in them sometimes, as well as acrylic stains. But they, you know, they're largely these kind of abstract realms where landscape and ideas about light and time really emerge, as well as, you know, spaces where I'm thinking a lot about architecture and armature and what kind of rigid supports are necessary and are going to come into the equation, whether it's the wall, whether it's a type of framing that might come later. So in a lot of ways, I think my works evolve over time. Sometimes they need other materials to really be realized and finished. I would say right now I'm very much in this kind of first stage of collecting gestures and marks on these really open fields. And then we'll see what kind of emerges to, like, sort of, quote unquote, like, finish or fix them, if that makes sense.
That does make sense. I love that. And it also seems that you're getting into, and perhaps we can talk a little bit about the history of of Santa Cruz. I mean, just very, very briefly,
sure.
Because that's part of this process,
yeah.
Right? We're talking about physicality, but there's also the history of the land, the space that you're in. It sounds like these works get involved
yeah.
with, or no, they
yeah.
do, right? And so,
they
and
do,
so what is
and
the, what's the mm-hmm. history of? I mean, I can't mm-hmm. tell me the history of Santa Cruz, I know, but I'd love to just know
mm-hmm.
the seedy part.
Yeah, you're like, how about the drama, the gossip? No, well, I'll tell
right.
you, my relationship to Santa Cruz, I was born here, my mom was born here, my dad's from Southern California, from L.A., but I do think that my work really comes out of a California landscape, you know, both Northern and Southern. I feel like it's really in my blood. I think back to my grandparents who moved to Santa Cruz, you know, my mom's parents, they chose to move from the San Joaquin Valley to Santa Cruz at that moment in time in their lives because of its physical proximity to San Francisco. They felt like if there was an atomic bomb, the fallout would be okay if they were in Santa Cruz. So I kind of love thinking about, like, just that initial reason of why my family is even here. My dad went to UC Santa Cruz. So he was kind of like, you know, this hippie artist from L.A. that wanted to go do, like, a Psych 101 class, you know, on a hillside. Both of my parents are artists, and I grew up really visiting lots of different artist studios and a lot of artist professors, and exploring materiality was very much central to my upbringing. There was an artist, actually, who was a professor at UC Santa Cruz. She was also at UCLA. Her name was Mary Holmes. But I remember being a kid and going to these big parties at her house. And I remember, you know, she built a temple for her paintings. And she, I remember being in her house at one of these parties and a horse walking through the house. I mean, I think about Santa Cruz as this place, you know, where I think a lot of people who could be described as eccentric. But, of course, that's, like, an unfair label, I think, because there's so much more to these people who have often been on the margins. But I think that there is something about Santa Cruz that draws folks in because it does have this incredible natural beauty and this temperateness. But it's also a college town. It had a lot of serial killings. It was known as the murder capital of the world for a while in the 70s. It has the boardwalk, which is this sort of like punk, but like surf culture grit. And then there's the yuppie culture. And so there is this kind of interesting.
But it sounds like with
the
murder and the kind of surfing skating culture, is that the seedy part? The rest sounds pretty good.
Yeah. You know, I think when I think about Santa Cruz, I think there is a relationship. Maybe it used to be this way. I sure hope it's not going to move away from this entirely, because I know now with Silicon Valley, it kind of is. But I think that there was a way where the uniformity of living and culture was really resisted in Santa Cruz. There was, like, you know, no billboards were allowed for a while. But I think with that amount of sort of individual expression, there was, like I said, unfortunately, like a lot of murders, a lot of serial killers, a lot of eccentrics and like kind of fringe folk attracted to this location and the ideas here. So, I mean, what I really love about Santa Cruz and being here now is a return to the kind of earth and the landscape that you brought up about this place. You know, there was a huge fire that tore through the Santa Cruz Mountains this summer, and it was really a scary time. And a lot of my work actually was really in a place of homesickness and like thinking about the change of this environment. Luckily, you know, the town didn't, you know, get completely burned down or anything, but there were a lot of people I know who are actually who don't have homes at the moment because of the fires. So, yeah, Santa Cruz is, it's a place that I'm really happy to actually be able to be now and get to know in a different way. I mean, so much of what I experienced here as a kid has changed. There was a place that I used to go when I was younger that was on the UC campus called Elfland, and it was a bunch of little redwood rings and houses that were built by students, you know, basically like living in the forest. And of course that was taken over and a college eight, I think, was built there. But as a kid, I used to go to this site and, you know, you might find all number of things in this location. But I'm really interested in these sort of indoor, outdoor, built, not built, just formed by, you know, by nature's forming spaces. And I think in a way, a lot of the artists that I'm really inspired by have constantly turned to their interior and exterior worlds and have kind of generated some sort of, you know, other space, other world. I mean, I'm thinking about like Nikki de St. Phalle's Tarot Garden in Tuscany, for example, or even, you know, someone like Alan Shields or Lee Bontague, artists in like the 70s in New York City who were kind of thinking about painting sort of the kind of wonky, unfashionable moment that painting had in the 70s and what they were pulling from their actual lives, whether it was sailing or found, you know, metal that they were, you know, sourcing in the New York streets at that time. So I think I'm really excited by artists who are drawn towards materiality and then are able to find some way to inject that materiality kind of back into the world, really.
I like that. Yeah, well put. And before I ask you the last question, what's the plan? When do you go back to the East Coast? And you're driving back, I imagine, driving in a car?
Yeah, driving back in a car. I think that the plan is to go back sometime in spring. And, you know, I think we're going to do a more southern route and try to see a little bit of, like, the southwest and maybe even, you know, the south of the country also. We did some really incredible sightseeing, I would say, on the way there. Like, we saw parts of the country I'd never seen, like Wyoming and these incredible canyons. But I think on this journey, it's going to be, you know, the southern side and probably similar in terms of camping. And I'm excited to see what comes out of the rubbing process on this second iteration. My baby will be much more mobile, so that'll be interesting. You know, there's going to be these little subtle shifts, and we'll see where the world is at that time, too. You know, it's such a hard time to make plans and predict anything. But in a way, the format or the structure of the cross-country trip, the way we did it anyway, there was a really incredible rhythm that developed because of just, okay, we need a place to sleep at night, we need to eat, we need to, you know, there needs to be some sleeping that happens in the middle of the day for the baby. You know, we have to get our, we called it jollies. We have to, like, get out and explore with our body and move around and get his jollies out. So that will all repeat.
Right, in a slightly different, slightly more mature form, so to speak, right?
Well, mature is a questionable word for where he's at, but yes, you're right.
Right.
Older.
So what are you reading at the moment?
Well, you know, I'm reading a lot.
If it's children's books, you can tell me that too. I'm always curious if you're reading board books. Which ones?
Yes. Well, alphabets have been really exciting, and books about animals. So books about sounds are really big at the moment around here. You know, in terms of non-children's books, I've actually been reading, or maybe they are children's books, been reading a lot of fairy tales. There's this collection of fairy tales by Andrew Lang and Nora Lang. They were a married couple, but they're these different colored fairy tales. So there's the crimson or the lilac or the olive fairy book, and they're these different collected fairy tales from across the world. I've been enjoying reading those. I was also reading Caliban and the Witch by Silvia Federici. I was reading that as well as, like, this book about the plague year by Daniel Defoe. I was reading these books earlier in the pandemic to kind of ground and connect my little existence, the sort of smallness of me, to larger moments throughout history where there have been these incredibly, similar intense plagues. But, you know, I really fluctuate with what I kind of want to what I want to read, what I want to immerse myself in terms of literature, fiction, and nonfiction. And I've even been just pouring through photography books. My dad has just such an incredible collection of photography books, so that's been amazing to really just look at images as well. Well,
that's
as words.
Nice. Yeah, photography books are special. It's the only kind mm-hmm. of book for artists that actually faithfully reproduces, in many cases, exactly what the art is, you know?
True. Yeah, very true.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today. I want to wish you well with your stay in Santa Cruz, your time, your work, as well as your trip back. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.